Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Adam Wozniak. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Darren Parkinson. How you doing, Darren?
No, I'm doing great today, Adam. How are you?
Doing well. We are Biz Radio U, unifying business and university by showcasing the best in business. So, Darren, have you seen, are you hyped for the new Logan movie today?
I'm over the top about it. I mean, I've always been a huge, huge Marvel fan. And I don't know, to me, honestly, it was the, I think their marketing this time. The first trailer that they dropped, I don't know what song they used, but man, that hit me. Like, I was like, I'm invested.
Oh, no, it was a great trailer.
Yeah.
And I really like how they didn't show too much plot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't read those. It's like based on the Old Man Logan comics. So
yeah.
I haven't read those, but
yeah,
I do like how it was the X-23 girl or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But yeah. That, and they're planning on doing a black and white version of it.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be awesome. Kind of like the Mad Max.
Oh,
black,
yeah.
Black and white. I saw that and it was great.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people love that stuff. I'm more of a modern man myself. So yeah. So I never really followed like the older comics or anything like that. It was for me, it's more about you know, like seeing what they can do now with technology and everything like that. So I got my old school tendencies too, but I'm fully embracing the new school. You know.
Oh no, it's great. And so we have a very special guest today. I mean. She is Andrea Pino, and she is, yeah, the CEO of Pino Properties LLC. How are you, yes, doing, Andrea?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Just to start us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company?
All right. My name is Andrea Pino. I'm a finance major at Kennesaw State University with a Spanish minor. I'm president of Delta Phi Epsilon and CEO of Pino Properties, which is a management company. So we own property and, you know, manage our tenants. So.
Oh,
it's a little bit about me, yeah.
So is it like rental property or?
Mm-hmm. Residential, okay, rental property. So I've had mainly just experience with residential, but hopefully in the future, commercial.
Okay. So. Is it like is it Cobb County area?
It's actually in Roswell. So
Roswell, okay. Mm-hmm,
we were trying to focus back in Atlanta, but that didn't work out. So we kind of moved back to Roswell to do it. But hopefully within the next year, we're going to hopefully get more business and buy a few more properties to expand it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll have to look into actually getting a management company to manage all of them. But right now it's just self-done by myself. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I rent and, it's similar to a company like your own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a family business. And
right,
the lady who owns our property, our landlady, mm-hmm, she's very nice and she's a great landlady, but they do it all the management stuff by themselves. And,
right.
But she's like always running around the place and she's very busy.
Yes, because it's very client oriented. So you're making sure that the client is first.
Right.
You know, you're there for them. And so the business would not run without them. So it's like, you know, yeah, you have one person, but you're running around for them all the time. So when you have, you know, more than one, so when we're hopefully going to get five within the next year, yeah, there's no way that just one person can do it all. So we're looking to expand, hopefully.
All right. Yeah. So how did you get started in real
estate? Oh man, back when I was 17. I mean, it was a long time, wow, ago. So it had an unfortunate start. So my father was very sick, but, you know, he had a lot of business and we brought it back up here. And so, you know, our mindset as a business family was like, what are we going to do with this now? And so, you know, they gave me the option, you know, Andrew, we were really involved in real estate. You know, why don't you get into it? Why don't you set something up for yourself for your future? Something that'll give you an investment back in the future and something that hopefully you can work with. You know, for me at that time, I was like, no, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be this, you know, I'm not going to go in the same, you know, business footsteps. But, you know, my mom gave me the idea, you know, why don't we build this property? Let's just build a house. You know, you can live in it if you want, you know. But if not, why don't we sell it after? And I said, you know, okay. I mean, being 17, I was like, sure, like, that sounds great, you know. I didn't know anything. I mean, I couldn't even legally do anything. So my mom was the big catalyst in it, and she really helped me out into creating this property. And so we built it. And it was the first time that house has been built in that neighborhood in, like, 7 years since the recession. And so when we built it, beautiful, I mean, to what we wanted it to be, but we built it at such low cost. And so, you know, I never had an emotional attachment to the home, but then my mom was like, you know, maybe it's time to sell. You know, let's go ahead and do that. And so when, mm-hmm, we did, we went ahead and sold the property and made profit for it for about 20%. And from there, we kind of saw, okay, this could be a potential business. You know, this could be
all
something.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, we could grow into. And so, you know, my mom being in, you know, real estate too, and her being involved with it, because my dad was mainly commercial and his own property in Florida, in business, you know, we kind of just focused on residential. And so we started, you know, looking at more properties, and we found some in Atlanta. We were trying to buy those and kind of expand in there. Mm-hmm. But then we found that flipping wasn't our thing. So it was mainly more conservative practices of, you know, renting out and being a landlord in that kind of case. So, mm-hmm. So that's how we got started. I was very, very young, but I've definitely grown as time goes on.
Yeah. So why'd you choose to go down that particular path versus flipping?
Because flipping, I guess, and I think this is something that's just very personal. I guess it's just because I'm very conservative with investments. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why you don't see me playing mm-hmm. with stocks a lot.
Yeah.
It's because I'm so terrified of, you know, what it could be. But obviously, the higher the risk, the higher the mm-hmm. possible return. And so, this was a path that I knew that it could be very stable and that I can grow in. I mean, was I going to grow very rapidly? You know, no. But I knew that there was a secure future in it. Flipping, you don't know what you're going to get, and you really do have to have the experience. You have to have the capital to do it. And I mean, it's fine, but you know, sometimes it's always what you're comfortable with. So I mm-hmm. guess for me, I'm very conservative. So for me, what if I didn't make that profit on that house? You know, what if it didn't work out that way? So that's kind of why I just stuck with rental properties. But, you know, I don't want that to be my only facet in life and my career. So I got my license. And so hopefully within the next few months, I'll be working for a company. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. So yeah. Earlier you mentioned you were trying to potentially going into commercial. When you say that, what do you mean exactly?
Commercial management at first, obviously, since that's mainly the experience I have. You know, managing properties commercially and hopefully expanding that sense with sales, but not so much in actually attaining the property.
So do you mean like strip malls, office parks, that kind
yes.
of thing?
Okay.
So
yeah, that kind of, I mean, even apartment complexes as a whole as well too. So, but the purchase side of that, no, obviously very expensive, but mainly just rentals and, you know, obviously, because everything is based on a lease in commercial properties. Mm-hmm. And so that's all based on tenants. Everyone's a tenant. It's not based on the emotional aspect of having a home, just like it is for commercial properties. So
yeah. It's like that disconnect there, you know?
Yeah. That's a big thing. It's, you know, some people really love commercial. You don't, because it's very bland. It's very emotionless. You know, you could just kind of pick it and choose it, mm-hmm. you know? You're not going around looking and saying, oh, yeah, this would be great to do this, this, and that. You know, it's all about making money for commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. It's about the business in there and how much they're going
to
make.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, like, you know, like, oh, this is where the kids are going to eat breakfast.
Yeah, you know? it's like, definitely different.
This is a, you know, this is a FedEx.
Right. And then I think one of the things, too, when you're managing commercial properties is how much you can help that owner make more money. You know, look mm-hmm. at what they're doing and seeing how they can maximize their profits as well. So that kind of differentiates as well from residential real estate because, you know, residential is very, it's very easy. It's very mm-hmm. relaxed. And it's about, you know, how they're living, how they're doing, you know. You're very, very separated from that. But, you know, when you manage commercial properties, you're also looking about how much they can grow.
Mm-hmm. So like when, you know, I've seen a bunch of strip malls, like they're all over the place everywhere you go. And you kind of tend to notice that some are, they're either all good or they're like dying. And mm-hmm. there's like one good one left. Mm-hmm. Is that something like with, that has to do with management? Like they're just picking, I guess, for lack of a better word, like, a, you know, a bunch of duds, bad choices there? Or is it?
It's all selective. I mean, you really can't not have a certain business because of how well they're doing or not. But, you know, it's sometimes just based on the area as well. Sometimes how the management company is managing them as well. To, you know, I mean, a lot of management companies don't go out of their way to help them maximize profits or see how they're running their business. Because a lot of them don't, you know, a lot of the owners of these businesses don't know what's actually going on. And so, you know, with that, you know, it's, that's what differentiates you from, you know, other commercial managers, because you get to be able to help them out. So mm-hmm. it could be potentially that it's just that they're not allowing them to see the best side of themselves for that business. So
yeah, they don't have that, I guess, that support, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because who would know the area better than the people that
own? Right. And you know, if you notice that it's mainly like smaller businesses that are mm-hmm. fading. So that's where you can see a big, I guess, help for yourself is you can kind of look at these smaller companies that are obviously struggling, and you're looking at a Starbucks or you're looking at, you know, big auto parts store that's well known. They do well because mm-hmm. it's on a corporate level. But yeah. Small businesses, that's where you can really hone in. That could be your niche, is helping them out.
They need the help.
Correct.
Or mm-hmm. maybe not even need, but can use it.
Right. Because when you're in a corporate setting or you're in a corporate environment, you have so many different resources. Mm-hmm. You know, small businesses don't get that. So,
I guess for someone starting out that's thinking about getting into the realtory business, what's your advice for them? What did you do when you decided, you know, I need to learn more about this, I need to educate myself on this? And what are some of the steps you took?
First, deciding if this was a full-time or part-time thing. Mm. Everyone that gets into it, and one of my best friends is a realtor, so we talked about it all the time, is like, oh yeah, I'm going to get into it part-time. You know, I'm just going to do this on the side. The reality is that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It could exist for a little bit of time. You know, you can have your friends and your family that you can go to, but after that, what? You know, you have to have your referrals. You have to do this more than just a part-time business. Mm-hmm. It extends to, you know, cold calls. It extends to having a really rough start. People, they get into it, kind of think it's first like a side job kind of thing. But the reality is it's a lot of work and you're not going to see commission. You're not going to see a lot of money for a while. And this is particularly for the sales side. You know, and to get into actually owning a property and being a landlord and doing all these kind of things, you have to have the capital to do it. So that's kind of like later down the road. I just think I've had the head start on that. But, you know, you can always get into the sales side of it. And that's the most difficult part because about like 80%, I think, that's what he told me. I mean, they kind of fade out.
Mm-hmm.
These people that say, I want to be like the next $1 million listing,
yeah,
you know, person on that mm-hmm. show. And it really doesn't work out to be because they kind of have these false hopes and these kind of illusions that they have in their head that they think it's going to be easy, but it's not. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to decide if you want to put the work in and you want to, you know, put all of your effort into it, knowing that you probably won't make anything for a while,
mm-hmm.
but knowing that if you're persistent, if you kind of differentiate yourself from the other thousands and thousands and thousands of realtors and mm-hmm. agents, you know, trying to see that there is mm-hmm. a really good possibility to succeed, but it takes a lot of time.
Yeah. And what are some of the ways you differentiate yourself?
Well, I haven't been on the sales side, mm-hmm. at least, but I think for me, it's more of the personability. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of landlords are very cold. Mm-hmm. So for me, I always try to at least build some type of relationship. So that way it's more casual.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just kind of look at it for the money aspect,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously easy to do, yeah. because it's all profit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can make a connection with those that you work with, especially, you know, your customers, then obviously, you know, you can differentiate yourself in that sense and allow them to see you as more than just a landlord.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So in a sense, you're almost selling a friendship. It's
correct.
More of a partner platform where you look for mutual benefit and helping them out. And it's less about, you know, how can I make a dime and nickel off this person over
yes.
here? Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes. And that's, you know, obviously not all the relationships are going to go perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had a time where there are just tenants we just didn't see eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, you just have to learn how to have patience.
Yeah.
But you know, it's all about being personable and knowing that you're there for them more than just the, you know, the mm-hmm. profit aspect. So.
And I got to ask, you don't have to give any names away, but
oh, no,
you probably have some interesting war stories with that, because I know some people can, I've seen what some of my friends can do to houses and that they're renting, and you probably have some interesting stories.
Oh gosh, yeah. So we had a tenant that told us, you know, we're going to stay for a whole, you know, year. They had their contracts. We do a year by year contract. And so we're like, okay, that's fine. And then, but they told us, they forewarned us, you know, we're going to probably be leaving if we find the house that we love. You know, our kids just went to college. We're like empty nesters. We don't really have anything, but we don't really care to buy a house. But if we find the house, like, we'll go get it. And we said, okay, but you know, there's an early termination fee. So if you go, you know, mm-hmm. it's in the contract,
yeah.
you know, you signed to that.
Yeah, it's pretty standard.
Right. And so, that's fine. And when it got to that point, it wasn't something they did to the house, but they told us, you know, okay, we're leaving. We found the perfect house. Like, oh, yeah, that's awesome, you know, but, you know, you are breaking your contract. And we told them that ahead of time. And it was like a surprise. We're like, really? We are? Mm-hmm. You know? Oh,
wow.
You know, so, and that was kind of bitter. And it was nothing bad. You know, nothing bad happened. I think when they kind of saw it in the contract and they saw their signature on the contract and they saw what they kind of signed up for, they said, okay, yeah, this was kind of on us. But sometimes it's hard to try to explain it to them over and over again and try to like show them the proof, and they kind of just don't want to accept that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it ended fine. I mean, it was very amicable, but it's always concerning. I've never had anything physically happen to the property. That I've been really lucky with, because that's a big tear. But I think that's also with making sure that you get the right tenants too. That's mm-hmm. why you have the application process, the the background checks and making sure what their history was with other landlords and things like that. So you kind of have to save yourself. That's a responsibility of both like the landlord and the tenant. So.
And what are some of the things that you look for in tenants that either are like red flags or things that you see that are like, I want that tenant? What are some of the things you look for?
That they pay on time. And that speaks volumes, not just about what they can deliver on a timely basis, but just that they're responsible. If they can meet those expectations, it means that they can be responsible in other aspects as well. We obviously look to see if they're, you know, they're previously good tenants. And we also see if they're consistent with renting and their properties. Like, obviously, if they go after 3 months, why would we want to be able to sign them on, you know? Because that means that we're probably going to break their contract. We're probably going to have the same situation and all this kind of thing. So we kind of look for things like that that are consistent, that they're not, they're staying for longer than a few months. And
Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked that is my parents are renting out the house that they moved out of before they sold it. And they had a very interesting thing happen to them. The couple that rented out said on the form that they had, I think it was, three kids. And when they actually showed up, went through all of the process, everything like that, they showed up and they came to us and they said, there's something we have to tell you.
Oh, gosh.
They had 10 kids and a dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 kids and a dog. And,
I mean, they had a pretty heartwarming story, but I mean, that was...
Overwhelming?
Yeah, it was overwhelming. So they were torn between, you know...
Do y'all have a basketball goal? They can have some pickup games?
Yeah. I mean, they got my trampoline, so I was a little heartbroken with that. There was no space, you know, where we're moving to, but... It was really interesting seeing that happen. I mean, we ended up working it out, you know, because they said that in the future they wanted to potentially buy the house, and it worked out in the end. But I mean, yeah, there's some interesting things that happen with that line of work.
And you see everything. It's very unique. I mean, the people you meet, the stories might be similar, but the reality is they're different. Always. The people are different. I think that's why it's cool to be personal with them and get on that kind of level, because you get to make that connection. You just said there was a heartwarming story. I don't think that would have happened if you didn't want to make that connection either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So earlier, before you came on, before we started the show, we talked a little bit about your sorority.
Would
you like to give us a little information about that?
Yes. Okay. So I'm currently the president of the chapter at Kennesaw State, Delta Phi Epsilon. But before, I was actually VP operations. So I managed all the money for the chapter as well, taxes, etc. I managed coordinators and did all of that. And now I'm in this position. So now I've got another year. My term ends in December, but it's been...
So is it like an election process?
Yeah, it's very democratic. It's a huge process. And we have a chapter of 190 women. So
yes,
a lot of girls. That's... Yeah, but it is an election process and everything is a hierarchy. So, you know, you kind of start as a coordinator and then you go up and you go to, you know, the LT positions or your exec boards, as they call it in other chapters, and then you go up to being president, et cetera. But I mean, there's other routes as well. You can go Panhellenic or go this route as well, so...
Yeah. I mean, you're speaking Latin to me.
I always try to make sure that like it kind of makes some sense, because sometimes...
But I mean, this is a defined and very specific structure.
Yes.
Set in place to keep everything on track.
Yes.
I understand they do a lot of charity work and all that.
Yes. So
anything you want
philanthropies, and we have 3 philanthropies. We have community service. You know, we do a lot with that in the community. Cystic fibrosis, anorexia nervosa, and associated disorders, as well as the Educational Foundation. So we have way more philanthropies than I think a lot of other chapters do. It kind of differentiates us, but it's a lot of hard work, though. So it's also, you know, really cool to try to manage everyone going to these kind of things and seeing what goals we can set for ourselves every single year. So we focus, I mean, obviously we're a social sorority, but, you know, we like to focus and make sure that we have our morals and our values in place by, you know, really involving ourselves in our philanthropies and also in charity work and that's outside of our philanthropies and doing what we can for the community around us as well.
Yeah. And what kind of skills did you say that you gained from being in a leadership position in the sorority that translated to your property business?
So like I told you earlier, I was like, I'm set to be a doctor. This is what I'm made for. You know, I'm really excited about it. But then when I started going to the business and I started going to like the business aspect of everything, you know, things started to change. And the reality is when I switched my major to finance, I was like, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know, because I had my mindset to going this certain route that I kind of just lost myself. And so, I really didn't have a niche. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had, you know, the real estate thing going on, but I was like, maybe I go to the corporate world. You know, I went to an internship with Wells Fargo. And so like, I thought that's what I wanted, but it was so short-lived. And so this sorority actually allowed me to see the colors that I wanted to see and see what I actually wanted to do. So when I went into this position, there's a lot of things in the chapter within finances that I saw could have growth and things like that. And they weren't things that were very complicated, but I was able to grab these things and be able to try to, you know, help them out. And so I went from this person before taking this position, not knowing what I wanted to do, not even understanding how finances worked. And I actually took this situation, which was like a real life experience of a chapter managing almost $100,000. And, you know, being able to see how I can optimize it for the chapter. How can I most benefit this chapter and see how they can grow from it? You know, put things in place for allow them to grow for years to come and things like that. So, I went from not having any experience to going to this chapter and saying like, okay, I can actually do this. You know, this is something I really enjoy. So it allowed me to kind of know what I was doing in terms of finance, in terms of my major, but then also learning how to budget better and manage money better within my own business. So
okay, so you have just not just like theory, like leadership skills and all that. You had direct financial experience.
Yes. And it was very overwhelming because when you're in a chapter, these are people who are very close to you and you want to do the best for them. It's a different setting, you know, and you want to make sure that you're doing the best for almost 200 women. And it's definitely nerve-wracking. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah, but
your friends, your sisters, you care about them.
Yeah.
And you try to do the best you can.
Yeah, and also put things in place for the future, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I grew up with one sister, and managing that relationship was a nightmare. So, I admire you for all that you do. That is, wow.
It's a lot, but I really do love what I do. The experience has really allowed me to grow, and it was really awesome to be able to see the woman that come in and took my place, and she was able to really grow in that position as well. And I'm seeing that she's doing great things, and that she's doing things that I didn't even see myself doing before. So there's things that I kind of look back, I'm like, man, I wish I did that.
Yeah.
And then she's actually doing it. So it's really nice to see her grow in that sense as well. So
that mindset right now that you just described, to see like an opportunity like that, where you said you didn't know much about it, but then you go into that position, understood it, and then helped it grow and just saw the potential in it. What makes you different that you could do that that most people don't?
I think it's a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people get swayed by negativity very easily, or there's a lack of patience, or you set these goals for yourself that don't meet. For me, when I came in and tried to understand it, it wasn't easy. I mean, it was hard. I had a lot of guidance from advisors. I asked a lot of my friends who were finance majors and who worked in finance. I tried to learn these things in order to best help these parts of our chapter, but as well, helping my own knowledge. And there's things and deadlines that I didn't meet. There's things that I tried to set in place that didn't work. And so for myself, it's just hope. It's about having a sense of patience as well, and making sure that if a goal is not met or something doesn't go out the way you want it to, it's fine. Move on, you know, try to say, okay, let's do this better next time. You know, it's a whole trial and error process. And so from there, I was able to learn more and more and more because I allowed myself to fall and fail sometimes. So that kind of set me apart because no matter how stressful it got, and I wanted to put my hair out sometimes and I was like, oh my gosh, this is stressful. I was able to say, you know what? We can do this better next time. Yeah. Let's see where we can go from here, because it can only go up.
Mm-hmm.
And it can only improve. And so that allowed me to stay positive. That allowed me to move forward. And that allowed me to grow. And now I look back and I'm thankful that I was able to keep that mindset, because it's very easy to be negative. It's very easy to be pessimistic and give up and allow someone else to just do the work because you just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, that's very admirable. I resonate with that a lot. Something that KSU in particular has helped me out with is like install that. It's kind of similar to what you described, that entrepreneurial mindset, where you just see like an opportunity. You want to like just help it grow and just add value to the world,
right.
And that it really resonates a lot with me with your mission. So I thank you.
No, thank you.
Well, honestly, the world really does need more people like you. I mean, it's just like you explained, like going in there and then doing just helping it grow just out of that. And that's very admirable. Thanks.
Thanks. I appreciate it. You know, I'm really proud of what has been done, but I'm really excited to see where everyone can go as well. I think it's really cool to be able to see what things you've put in place and what kind of effect you've had on people. But it's also been, you know, something that's mutual. You know, they've had effects on me as well, and they've kind of allowed me to grow. So it wasn't all me. You know, it was a lot of my sisters as well that helped me do that. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and there's one thing that's been killing me. How do you manage your time? You're a full-time student.
Yes.
You run a company. Mm-hmm. Major leadership position within a very large sorority.
Very large.
How do you do it?
Well, now I think it's mainly just balance and using my resources to actually manage my time. Because before, I mean, that was something I was so bad at. I mean, I was so bad at managing my time. I would always just have like a mental... Mm-hmm. No agenda, and it just doesn't work. Once you start, you know, growing in terms of your professional life, your academic life, your extracurricular life, you know, you have to be able to manage your time. And I just would always say, oh, I'll do it then, or I'll do it then, or I'll do it then. It never happened. And so for me, I, you know, use the resources around me. I always make sure that any messages I get, I always save it. I have a calendar, you know, I always do that. But that's the book part of it. You know, for me, I always make sure that I can manage my time in terms of the parts and phases of my life. Right. So not put too much time into my professional life where I forget about myself. Mm-hmm. Not put too much time into my personal life where I kind of forget about professional life. So I always make sure that each part of my life is getting that same percentage. And so that way
so
I can
treat it all equal.
Yes. Obviously, some things take precedence over others, but it's about making sure that every single one gets the equal amount of time that it needs.
Yeah.
So
I mean, is there any, I know you just explained it, but maybe within that, any tips for people that are trying to...
Don't procrastinate.
Don't procrastinate. That's a good one. But maybe people that are trying to maybe expand their extracurriculars, like maybe second year of college, third year, something like that, or just trying to branch out and kind of find themselves. Because that's when I started doing extracurriculars, you know, after I had a few years. Any advice for those students?
Make a structure for yourself. Try to set times for yourself. Make sure that you're kind of allowing yourself to create goals and allowing yourself to, you know, put some time on those goals. You know, when you get there, making sure that your schedule fits, making sure not to take too much of, too many responsibilities and just keep packing them on into one time. Make sure that you use time to your own best benefit, you know, see what you can handle for a short amount of time or a long amount of time. So it's about time, it's about structure, and it's about goals.
Just big three.
Big three.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, Andrew.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And before we go, is there any way, any places, social media, websites that people can contact you on if they're interested?
I have my LinkedIn. I'm always on that. And if you want to get me on Instagram, just kidding. LinkedIn. My professional place is LinkedIn. You can go there and then we can connect.
All right. Well, I'm Adam Wozniak.
And I'm Darren Parkinson.
And we are BizRadio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.